Hello and a warm welcome to the 59th episode of the Open Science Radio. I think it's the 59th, and hopefully by the time you will hear that, it's Open Science, Open Access Week, not Open Science Week. Why is there something, not something that is called Open Science Week?
It's historical, I guess, right? I mean, I'm here as well.
Maybe it's time to change.
Yeah. I think this is historical speaking because they started with Open Access, now it's Open Science. Anyway, right. Sorry, I'm interrupting you, Matthias.
No, it's fine. As you can hear, Konrad is with us.
Hey, guys.
And again, we are not alone because we have two guests. Please warmly welcome virtually Heidi and Joaquin.
Hi.
Hi. Nice to be here.
And since it is Open Access Week, it is probably a very good opportunity to talk about a project that is strongly related to open access, open science, and many other facets. And actually, it was Heidi who contacted us about this project, and we thought it is that interesting that we should definitely have an episode about it. And we're going to speak about OpenML. Before we actually come to the to this topic, we might give you two a bit of room to get yourself introduced to our audience.
Okay. Hello.
Yeah. You want to start, Joaquin?
You go first.
Okay. So I'm Heidi Seibold, and I'm a PhD student in biostatistics at the University of Zurich. And there I developed new methods for clinical trials to find patient subgroups which react differently to a treatment than other patients. And yeah, in my free time, I organize an R meetup, I write a blog, I dance salsa, and I spend a lot of time on my bike. I guess that's it.
And probably also a lot of time within this project.
Yes. Yeah, that's during work hours, though.
Ah, cool.
Excellent.
Mostly.
If your hobby can be your job, this is the best way of doing that.
Yes.
Joaquin, what are you doing?
Hi, I'm Joaquin van Schooren. I'm an assistant professor at the University of Eindhoven in the Netherlands. And most of my research is on machine learning. And I'm mostly on meta-learning, that's learning to learn. So we build algorithms that basically learn when to use which machine learning algorithms, which parameters and such on, so that if you have a problem, it's basically you don't have to choose algorithms anymore and parameter settings, but the algorithm would learn how to do that for you. So that makes machine learning a lot easier, especially for people which are not experts in machine learning. Hmm. And we use it also for all kinds of projects with for instance, with drug discovery and other sciences. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of my time goes into OpenML, of course.
Speaking of no experts, probably not everybody is very familiar with machine learning. I'm pretty sure that most of our listeners have heard the term and probably know roughly what it is. But could you give a short kind of explanation what machine learning is all about?
Okay, imagine that you have to write a program to listen to a voice and then output the text that's being said. That will be very hard to program, right? It will have lots of complications and it's very hard. We don't know how to do that. So what machine learning does, machine learning has algorithms that you train to get all these fine variations, and then it will automatically learn how to extract, for instance, the text from a sound, right? Especially, it's what comes out is what we call a model that's given some input and produces some output, and this is typically some inherent information in the input. Or it can also be predictions for the future. For instance, you can train a machine learning algorithm to look at an X-ray and then predict whether there's, for instance, a deviation or a break or a cancer in that image. Mm.
And it's basically doing this by learning what kind of patterns are normally existing in the data set and then looking where the deviation is?
So basically what it learns is some kind of complicated mapping between the inputs and the outputs, right? And there's many different ways to do that. Maybe you've heard about neural networks. So there you have a model of the brain that's in between. And basically you tune tiny variations in the connections between the neurons. And then if you tune those right, then you map the input to the output. So a voice can come in and out comes the meaning of it. If you tune those weights correctly. And there's different other algorithms that you can use. For instance, you can have simple decision trees that just look at the data and then predict either a category or a value. There are algorithms that are based on probabilistic reasoning. There's some that are based on genetic programming and so on. Basically, anything that maps the inputs to some kind of output automatically, that's machine learning.
Yeah, probably also like what a lot of people know also counts like as machine learning is linear models, logistic regression and stuff.
Mm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And what is precisely OpenML? What kind of project is this? And which problem does it tries to solve?
So OpenML is basically a collaboration platform for machine learning. So it allows you, instead of being in a lab with three people working on a new machine learning model, to do this worldwide. Right? So it allows you to share data on the platform, and then anybody can download the exact same data and then build models with that, try different machine learning algorithms, and then you share those models. And the what we call the workflows, the processes, the algorithms that you use. And then other people can then look at your model, what you're doing, maybe think about that, talk about that, maybe improve them further and so on. So all that collaboration, that's happening on the platform. So you share data sets, you share algorithms, you share models. And what OpenML does is organizing all this information very nicely, and it also evaluates models on the server side so that you can immediately compare my model to your model and see which one is better.
Mm-hmm. And by the way, you did a very good job. I mean, the page looks very, very nice, and it's very intuitive to go through this, so I'm really amazed by that. Mm-hmm. And this is really, I think, a great help even for me. I'm a bioinformatician, so I'm applying this sometimes, but not so deep as you are in that. So this is really cool to explore different approaches and so on. So historically speaking, how did this start? Because it looks very sophisticated already, but I guess this was quite some effort. So how did you come to the point where it is now?
So basically, this came out of my PhD research. So I was doing meta learning. So I wanted to understand when to use a certain machine learning algorithm. And there was basically no objective way of doing this. So there were many, many experiments published in papers, but I could not use those because they were run under different situations and by different people. So it was not reproducible, not interpretable at all. So that's why I worked on these experiment databases, which is basically a database where you store machine learning experiments in. And then more and more people got involved. And then I was really inspired by the polymaths. Maybe you've heard of them. There's a group of mathematicians led by Tim Gowers. Basically, you take a very hard mathematical problem, and then you go online, and anybody in the world can help solve that problem. And this is basically what I wanted for machine learning as well. So some place where you could ask, okay, I have this very hard data set. I'm trying to maybe fight some kind of cancer. But I used machine learning for 10 years, and I have some ideas about how to do that. But maybe somebody else has a better idea. right? And that's the whole thing. So with OpenML, you can share the data set and you can share your own models if you want to. And then anybody mm-hmm. in the world can download all that information and try to build better models and collaborate with you to build better models. So basically make the whole process completely open. And how did it start? Well, after I did my PhD, I had a little project to do this. It was called Massively Collaborative Machine Learning, and also got some money from the EU to work together with some people on this. And that's when, for instance, Bernd got involved. Mm-hmm. From then on, from then on, the project basically branched into different directions. For instance, there are people working on the website, people working on R interfaces and Python interfaces, integrating it into machine learning libraries, building algorithms on top of all that data to automatically help people use machine learning, and so on.
Mm-hmm. How many people are in totally involved right now?
I think right now we're really actively involved. So we have hackathons every 6 months. And typically there's a core group, I think, of about 10, 15 people. Mm-hmm. And then a looser group of about, I think, 30 people that are regularly involved. Yeah.
So this is already a very strong project. And you started your PhD, or basically, in which year was this started? So how long is this already ongoing?
So from the early beginnings, I did my PhD in 2010. Mm-hmm. OpenML started, I think, the very first meeting. Well, it was called ML Open at the time. I think that was, I don't know, 2012. And then when we really got the first prototype, that was, I think, 2013.
Mm-hmm. And was the idea of having a single new platform instead of trying to look where for a platform that might already exist, was it due to the fact that you need in the background these algorithms that analyze machine learning algorithms? So that extra meta step that other platforms might not offer?
It's not even below that there is an issue. People are using, for instance, GitHub a lot, right? So there are some people who have GitHub repositories where they have their algorithms and their experiments online, and that's great. But I cannot immediately use those results because a lot of metadata, important information is missing from that because everybody does their experiments differently. So with OpenML, you can see this as a GitHub with an extra layer on top that has all the meta information about the experiments. You basically create one big sandpit, one big playing field for to compare algorithms.
Okay. It's basically streamlining everything, right? So basically that you have, it's like a proper repository. You have basically an open standard that you apply there and making stuff comparable, right?
Yeah, so we have protocols about how to share experiments with the server so that all the information is there. But as a user, you don't see that because that's all integrated into the tools. But when you do an experiment, so you can break open R and with four lines of code, you download it, there's an OpenML, then you build a model, and then you upload it again. And in the background, it will just attach lots and lots of information to that so that we can reproduce the results and compare it to other results.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And I would like to come back to the point you said. I mean, you have now 10 to 15 people or even more if you take all the others into this. So this is a really proper mid-sized project already. So how do you do this? How do you manage the people and how are people involved in this? I mean, for example, Heidi, when did you join and when did you participate in that? What was your path to it?
I came in March this year, actually. And well, it basically was I wrote to an email to Giuseppe, who's a PhD student with Bernd Bischel, and they're both involved in the project as well. And I was asking him which conferences he's going to this year. And then he said, yeah, I'm going to this and that. And then I'm going to this OpenML workshop. And then I was like, what's this? Sounds interesting. Tell me more. And then I got really excited about this. And I thought it's a great idea. And then I asked if I can join. And that's how it happened. And
so
basically people are like working on different fields within the project. Like we have like people who work on the server side, and for example, Giuseppe Bernd and I, we're involved more in integrating R into OpenML. So R is a programming language for statistical analysis. So everyone has like their own field that they're involved in. We have people who work on Python or Scala, stuff like this.
But you really organize a lot of basically community meetings where you can meet new people and basically increase the user base and teach, I guess, how this can be used, right? So this is an active part of this, or an important part of the community, right?
I guess most of the work gets done at the workshop, yes.
Yeah, I think so. Like the really big breakthroughs, they happen there.
That's often that you need this kind of dedicated time to really focus, bring people together at the right time and get stuff done, right? Yeah, this is always brilliant. It's kind of very intense hackathons that you should do from time to time, but you shouldn't do this all the time because then you will have a burnout rather quickly. But I guess this is really a cool thing. But still, I'm amazed that you basically have such a big community. How do you organize that? Do you have a mailing list, or do you have a Slack chat, or what is your approach of doing this and also handle this growing amount of people?
Okay. Yeah, I think we use the usual things. So GitHub is a very big part of it. So all of our code goes to GitHub, and that's where we talk about all the issues. So we have very long issue trackers, because every time we think, oh, we should talk about that, then it goes on an issue. And then two days later, somebody looks at that. My email is full of GitHub notifications. And then we have, of course, hackathons. Every 6 months, we have a Slack chat, a Slack channel. We talk about things. And then also a lot of email, just discussing how do you do that, and then we can't do it yet, so we have to do this, and so on. We have a mailing list, so if you want to get involved, there's openmachinelearning@gmail.com, googlegroups.com, that you can join. And then, well, just I think the big thing is to get in contact just on GitHub or somewhere else. You can also on GitHub, you can see links to some open problems we're solving that we need to solve.
Exactly. This would be my next question. So how can people contribute? What do you need? What is basically, where are some gaps to be filled? Is there a need of a specialized group of people? Or how can people who find this now very interesting can join and help the project?
Well, there's a lot of different ways, basically, you can contribute, right? Because, like, we need, for example, a lot of people who upload their data and create tasks. Mm-hmm. So basically anyone who has data and a question can come, like a domain scientist, a biologist, an economist. It could be a tech company or a nonprofit organization. Anyone who has data basically can get involved and upload their data. Then we need people who solve the tasks and share their code. So the data analyst, basically. Then there's the algorithm developers who might want to benchmark their new algorithm on diverse data sets and compare the results of their algorithm to existing algorithms that you can do as well. And that's really interesting and helpful for others as well. And then, like, if you want to contribute, like, to the code base, then you can just go on GitHub, make a pull request and add new features, for example, or if you see, okay, there's something missing, but I can't change it myself, then you can just open an issue on GitHub. I do that all the time because I don't know how to deal with the stuff on the server side. And there's also people who, like, can really profit from this. For example, students and teachers who can, like, learn about new algorithms, and, like, you can have a class of students work together online using OpenML, for example.
Hmm. So you have a very broad spectrum of people you're targeting in a way. So it's very very rich form. I mean, it's really amazing. And do you have different kind of ways of approaching these people, or what is do you have a strategy, or are they coming anyway? I mean, what is your experience with this? I'm asking just because I'm really, as I said, I'm really amazed how you have such a strong community already, and if this is just happening because it's such a cool project that is just collecting people, or is attracting people, or if you have certain ways of really trying to address the different audiences.
I think there's really two things, right? So one is just a great bunch of people. So every time you go to the one of the hackathons, just great fun and very interesting people doing interesting things. And that's I think the major draw of many people, because it's just a very nice community to talk with. Mm. And second, it's because OpenML is just useful for many people's research in very different ways. I mean, for me, I use it a lot for method learning research. There's, for instance, Matthias, who also writes like automated algorithms to choose parameter settings in algorithms, and you can use OpenML for that. You have Bernd, who has a very large machine learning library, and uses OpenML to test all different kinds of algorithms and all different kinds of data sets, so really hardcore benchmarking. There are other people, for instance, there's a group of bioinformatics. Cheminformatics researchers from Manchester, and they uploaded, I think, 15,000 data sets about drug discovery, and they run lots of algorithms on those data sets. And then, so the idea there is that they can basically automate the discovery of new drugs, which is very useful because many drugs kill millions of people, but are not being analyzed by pharmaceutical companies. But on OpenML, you can kind of collaborate on those problems. And this is, many people use it for their own research, and then they come to hackathons to see, oh, how do I do this? And then, yeah, that's how it grows.
And now we're here, and we try to advertise it via podcasts.
Good strategy, yeah.
Did you try, or do you have something in mind, like tracking what happens with the data sets and the algorithms in special that are developed on your platform?
Kind of data provenance, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So we do the normal versioning, and like you have in GitHub. So every time you upload a new version of a data set, OpenML automatically versions it and reanalyzes it. So OpenML, when you upload data set OpenML, it also extracts all kinds of metadata from that. So it knows what it's about. It knows which features are there, what the distributions of those features are. And when you upload a new data set, it will reanalyze that. So you can, over time, you can see how data changes. Although we don't have that many data sets that have millions of versions. Okay. Sometimes data sets only have like 5 or 10 versions.
And do you track somehow when certain algorithms or certain data sets are used within certain research projects and even mentioned, for example, in publications?
That's a good one. So what OpenML does really well is to get all these experiments, right? So for every data set in OpenML, you just click on data set and you click on the task, which turns classification, and you will get all the algorithms that have been tried on the task. So you see exactly all the algorithms that have been tried and how well they perform. So you know immediately which algorithms work really well on this kind of data. What we're doing right now actually is to first of all link the algorithms to GitHub repositories and pages where you can find the data sets. You can find the code. And another thing that's on our agenda is to link it to publications, but we're not there yet. Right now you can only add a reference in the wiki. So every algorithm, every data set has a wiki that anybody can edit. So you can add more information there. But we don't automatically create DOIs and so on.
Okay. I mean, if you store datasets or algorithms on GitHub, I think you could even use GitHub's DOI function to assign DOIs to these datasets.
Definitely. Or we can create interactions with, for instance, Figshare. Right. If you did it on Figshare, you should just be able to put a link in there because OpenML is just interfacing, right? So you don't need to upload the dataset to OpenML. You can just say my dataset is there on Figshare. It will then download it to analyze it, but the data just always points to the Figshare. And the same with ResearchGate, maybe to connect to publications. We're looking at it more that way. We want it to connect to different tools, a bit like Slack connecting to all different kind of other projects. You want OpenML to be connected. We don't want to reinvent what already exists. We just want to connect the machine learning experiments to what's out there.
Yeah. And I mean, it probably would also be promising for contributors that, for example, develop algorithms for OpenML for certain tasks to have these recognized within their old metrics score, for example, as a contribution.
So what we also do is Altmetrics. So alternative metrics. So when you upload your data, your algorithm in this case, or your data set, and somebody reuses it, it downloads, he or she downloads something or reuses it in an experiment, OpenML automatically tracks that. So you can see how many downloads, you can see how many experiments have been run using your code, and so on. So we do track all that, and we have GitHub like heat maps to see how active everybody is. So we were also working in that direction.
Cool.
Yeah, this is really great to motivate people really to generate useful data sets and appreciate this by basically ranking them due to that. I think you have this whole gamification point somewhere, right? I saw this on your website. It's really cool. By the way, what is your strategy regarding licenses? Do you have one license for all the data sets, or do you require that they come with a certain data set? And how about the code? What is your approach regarding that?
Okay, so basically, from our side, our code is all, what is it? Sorry, I think it's Apache license. So it's all open source. Mm-hmm. And all the data that we generate, all the metadata, that's just, I think it's CC0, I think, CC BY. And that's it. And all the stuff that people contribute, they can choose their own licenses. Okay. The only thing is that if you, you can just, when you upload a data set, there is a box where you can choose a license that you want to use. But the data set must be accessible because OpenML will try to download the data set. If it can't do that, then there will just be a big warning there. Like, okay, there's a data set you registered, but I don't know what it is because I haven't been able to download it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, this is, I guess, makes a good choice. And so how many active people are on the platform? I think several thousands, if I saw this, or 1,000, whatever, right? I mean, this is really, it's attracting a lot of users already. Do you have statistics where they're coming from? So how many of this really are and how where they come from? And maybe the distribution, the different scientific fields.
They come from all over the world, really. I think the only place that we don't have people from is Greenland, but yeah, it's some people from Greenland listening, just register, please. No, they come from all over the place. A lot of people are in Europe and the US. I think that's most of our user base. How many are there? So we have about 1,500 registered people. So why do you register? Because that allows you to download more data sets, mm-hmm. and also allows you to interact with people more easily. That's also important because when you share a data set, you want to know how much people are using it. So that's why we ask people to register, so that you can mm-hmm. at least count how many times data set will be downloaded, because that's important for the people who contributed. Then we have visitors to the website. I think there's about 200 unique visitors every day. They also come from all over the world. And then people who actively contribute, experiments, and upload data sets. That's, I think, a couple hundred, not a thousand, but at least a couple hundred people who upload data sets and experiments.
I mean, the numbers are quite impressive. If you, if someone opens your website and you have basically these four steps that you go through, the data sets, mm-hmm. the task, which is probably the description, what needs to be done with the data sets, the flows mm-hmm. Are probably the algorithms developed in order to solve these tasks, mm-hmm. and the runs are the applications of these algorithms?
Exactly, yes.
Okay, so... And just looking at these numbers, it's quite impressive, I think.
Yeah, so if you look at data sets, we have about 20,000 data sets. Now, about 15,000 of those are from the drug discovery group. Uh-huh. So they're basically all humankind's knowledge about how active is this drug against a certain, in this case, enzyme. Because if you want to know how you can inhibit the enzyme, if you can inhibit the enzyme that's part of a parasite, you can kill the parasite and so on. Mm-hmm. Lots of data sets about that. That we have a lot of general purpose machine learning that's just being used by the machine learning community for benchmarking.
Benchmarking in terms of how their own algorithms yes. are working compared to the ones that you offer or that someone has put into your platform.
Yeah, I think this is something where OpenML is really useful, because I think if you take any machine learning paper, basically they compare new algorithms against data sets that are from the 80s, which is okay. It does tell you that your algorithm is good at solving problems, but if I'm a biomedical researcher, that's not interesting for me. I want to see, okay, that's a cool algorithm, but how well does it work on my biomed data, right? And that's what OpenML really helps, because you can automatically run new algorithms on all the data sets that are there. And then you, as an algorithm developer, you get lots and lots of benchmark information about on which problems does it work well, on which problems does it not work well. And as a data set uploader, you get all the information by, okay, there's these 100 algorithms that have been tried, and these ones, they work really well. So now I don't have to run all the algorithms. I can just take the ones that work already quite well and that were contributed by other people. Okay. And we're also trying to automate this. So we have these bots that basically run algorithms on new data sets. So every time you upload a new data set, if you wait a while, there will be automatically experiments added by these bots.
Okay. Maybe, because I'm not from a very technical background, maybe the question is going too far. But how do you compare, actually, whether an algorithm works better or not so good? What is the measurement that you need to take as a comparison mm-hmm. basics?
Okay, good question. So basically, when you upload a data set, the next thing you do is create a task, right? Mm-hmm. And a task, something like, I want to do classification, I want to predict a variable, right? Or regression or something else, or clustering. Mm-hmm. And then there's a protocol. And if you use a machine learning tool like Weka or R or Python, scikit-learn. What happens in the background is it downloads data sets, and it downloads actually trained test splits of those data sets. Then it builds models on the training sets and then tests them on the test sets. And then it sends the predictions to the server. And then the server matches the predictions to the actual values. And then it creates all kinds of, it computes over 30 different metrics. So you can just choose afterwards which ones you're really interested in. Mm-hmm. Simple ones are just like accuracy, like what's the percentage of data points that you predict correctly? Or it can be very complex ones like AUC, that's the, the receiver operator characteristic curve. It computes all these metrics and different fields, they use different metrics. So you can basically reuse the information from different fields. So if you're a machine learner, maybe you're interested in AUC. So you just compare algorithms on AUC. If you are biomedical researchers, maybe you want something like the Matthews correlation coefficients or something else, and you can just choose that. So OpenML computes all the metrics simultaneously. So the user can decide how to interpret the data.
By the way, as you have now this beautiful website that is basically standardizing all the let's say evaluation of different algorithms, have you talked to journals or let's say other parts of the community to use OpenML as basically a requirement, or have this as a requirement when publishing, for example, new algorithms? Something like, I said I'm coming from bioinformatics, and if we have a certain study, let's say, about transcriptomic data, mm-hmm. we really require to upload this stuff, for example, to NCBI Geo or ArrayExpress. So basically, we have repositories that are well established in the community, and that it's basically good practice to put the data there, or we more and more get in the field also the requirements to put the code online to GitHub or somewhere else. But as you have here very dedicated and clearly standardized platform, it would be really ideal to make this a requirement. So are you in discussion, or are you talking to different stakeholders in the community to make this such a requirement?
Not really. So this is something that's, I think, we want to do in the near future. So if you are a journal editor listening, please contact us. I think we're very interested in having that conversation. What you do see is that this happens organically. So some conferences like ECML PKD, that's the main machine learning conference in Europe, they, on their website, they list, they say that if you upload, if you submit a new paper, they ask mm-hmm. you to upload the data also to OpenML or to any other data site, data mm-hmm. Repository. That's the first step. I think what we really want is to also have the algorithms and experiments in a standardized way. Mm-hmm. And we're not there yet. We're not that much. Mm-hmm. I mean, the machine learning field has not evolved that much in that direction yet. Mm-hmm. That will be really cool to have.
Hmm. It's a very vibrant field right now, right? I mean, many people are hopping mm-hmm. on this, and I think it's really growing dramatically. And this is, I guess, a perfect timing actually to set high standards in regard of openness. And I think mm-hmm. your platform is really ideal for that. And if more people know about this, well, you know, even as if this is not a, let's say, a strict requirement, if you are a reviewer of a paper, that you maybe can just suggest that, right? I mean, it's mm-hmm. no, the journal is not requiring this, but maybe if you want to have a following good practice, I would recommend to put the data and the algorithm on mm-hmm. OpenNL to make it more accessible. Huh? Okay, but this is something maybe the community can take, and as you said, maybe it has just to grow in this direction.
Yeah, there's one big difference, I think. If you work in bioinformatics, you first publish the paper and then you have to figure out how to upload your data to one of these microarray databases, for instance. That stuff comes afterwards. What's different about OpenML is that it basically collects all the information from the start. So instead of running algorithms locally, you can just add a few lines to your code so that all your experiments are automatically uploaded to OpenML. And then when you publish, you just say, you can just create what's called a study on OpenML. This is my collection of experiments. So you don't need to afterwards upload it because the experiments will already be uploaded in OpenML. And that's much better for reproducibility also.
Absolutely. No, this is a very good incentive that you have basically your workbench right in front of you. And in the end, you just push a button and then it's available to others and people can see it as a part of a publication. Like, absolutely. No, this is really
important. It's like using GitHub. And then afterwards, when you publish a paper, you say, this is my GitHub repo. You can just see there all the code and everything.
That's really neat, yeah, indeed. So, what is the direction where you're aiming for? What are the future plans? What are the next steps? Where do you want to go with OpenML?
Good question. It's an open source project, so many people take it in different directions. I think what we really want to do in the near future is to make it really social. So that you can create circles of researchers that you collaborate with more closely, and maybe you share more data with those people. So to have all the social networking happening, that's in the near future. Other things that we're working towards are more openness. For instance, we're working on linked open data formats, so all the information becomes available as linked open data. And then there are lots of other things you want to. I think the main push would be to integrate OpenML in all the machine learning tools that are around. So right now we have around, I think, 6 or 7 tools integrated, which is great. But maybe you want to integrate it also in all these new machine learning tools like TensorFlow and so on. It would be really cool to integrate it in there as well.
Okay. And by the way, how is it regarding funding? I guess you are working in a scientific environment, so I guess you need money for this. And you said in the beginning you had, I think, European funding in the beginning, something like this. How's this run currently? Are there special funds for this, what's the strategy regarding that?
I think that's a real challenge for us. I think most of the work happens just voluntarily because people think it's cool, they want to use it in their research. I mean, it also helps them do much better research, so that's why they do it. But we also, I think we do really need more funding to make all the services trustworthy. I mean, we have to pay servers and so on. So we do write all kinds of grant proposals. We're a bit successful there. But I think we can use all the help that there is to be able to put more people full time on the project. That will be great.
So if you're out there and you have funding, then let us know.
Thank you guys. Unfortunately, it's very common, right, that these infrastructure projects are hard to fund, right? I mean, even the big, the well-established big platforms, they sometimes struggle with funding because they are part of a grant that runs 4 or 5 years or even a few years. And then you have to look for other. And in the meantime, everybody's building on top of this and is relying so badly on this. This is a really unfortunate thing. And I hope that politics is addressing this in the near future and sees that as more and more stuff is going, weirdly speaking, going in, pushing everything into the cloud, that this cloud is also well-funded and appreciate it. So I really hope that you find some funding and whoever has an idea how to get something in this direction is, I guess, very welcome to join you guys and give recommendations, right?
Sure.
Maybe.
I think we're in already in quite a good shape because it runs voluntarily now, so it's not like tomorrow it will crash. It will crash if everybody dies, but it's not going to happen. But it's not like the project finishes and now there's no support anymore. I mean, it's really a grassroots project, so you can be fairly sure that people are using it and building it. It's a bit like Linux, right?
It's very strong due to that, sure. This is definitely an advantage, but it would be also good if people really can work full-time on this and push this even further.
What we really need is more urgency and have more resources to do things quickly, because right now sometimes an issue takes 2 months to be closed, and you really want to get that down to a week, right? That's where the main challenge lies. Yeah.
Okay. Otherwise, do we have missed anything? Is there anything you would like to talk about, or anything that should be covered? Or any last words? I mean, if we covered everything, it's also fine. I mean,
thanks a lot for having us.
Yeah, thank you. That was fun. Yeah, and if you're a listener and you think it's cool, just get in contact with us. There's many different ways we can do that. On the website, there are many ways to get in contact. If you want to help write code or you want to upload data, you're very welcome to do that. If you want to talk about organizing hackathons, maybe, or use OpenML in courses, that's all. We are very open, and we have materials to help you with that. Yeah, and we're just hoping to create a very cool project that's useful for many people.
Cool.
Yeah, and thanks to you guys.
Thank you. Yeah.
Sure.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Pleasure. Fun Pleasure. To like get to talk to you in person. I listen to you all the time, and it's like meeting my superstars.
Okay, I'm getting red now.
Yeah, here.
For our listeners, we can definitely recommend to follow your blog. I think there's a couple of posts in there, and hopefully there will be coming more.
Yeah, so we have a blog that you can. It's on Medium. You can also find it on the webpage, openmail.org. And we have something, so we have some blogs coming up. There's somebody writing about how to use GitHub notebooks, Jupyter notebooks with OpenML. So first, what you can do, for instance, it's very cool. So instead of having data loaded into a notebook and then have it locally, what you can do is just put all the data in OpenML and you download data into your notebook, and then you upload the experiments from the notebook directly to OpenML. So that really improves reproducibility. There will be a post on that. There will be a post very soon on the Python interface. How do you do machine learning with Python? So keep an eye on that.
Cool. Mm-hmm. And I can also recommend the YouTube channel. I think there's currently like 3 presentations on there to get a better understanding of how all that works. Because I have to admit, if you're not deep into programming and machine learning, it's kind of difficult to understand all the important details, what it really can provide and what the potential actually is. And I think these talks give a good introduction so that you can actually see how much there is in terms of potential.
Exactly. So our GitHub, our YouTube channel contains all videos that we record during hackathons. So they're very tutorial based, like. But we really want to expand on that. So if there's any funding to actually make more videos and such, that would also be cool.
Great.
Yeah, cool. So thank you very much for your time. This was really awesome. It's an awesome project. And as I said, I'm really impressed by all that. And good luck for the future. And I'm pretty sure we will bump into each other at some of these meetings at some point.
Cool.
All right, cool. Okay, guys. Then
bye-bye.
Time to say goodbye and talk to you soon at some point. Bye.
Bye-bye. Thank you.